हे कृष्ण हे यारव हे सखेथी अजानत माहिमानंत वेदं मया प्रमादात् प्रणयेन वापि. Thinking of you as my friend, I have rashly addressed you. O Krishna, O Yadava, O my friend, not knowing your glories, please forgive whatever I may have done in madness or in love. I have dishonored you many times, jesting as we relaxed, lay on the same bed, or sat or ate together, sometimes alone and sometimes in front of many friends. O infallible one, please excuse me for all those offenses. I am very grateful for the opportunity to be with all of you this evening. This very pleasant atmosphere of the courtyard of the ashram of the single family, where together this very exemplary family gathers together to hear and chant the holy names and glories of the Supreme Lord, and are very eager to humbly serve with great respect those who are aspiring in the service of the Lord. Under these beautiful starlit night of Kurukshetra, it is a very pleasing environment to discuss the subject matter of Sri Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is renowned throughout the entire world as the most philosophical, scientific explanation of spiritual truth and how to live in harmony with these truths, even in our everyday practical life. Bhagavad Gita is considered to be the basis of the Vedic scriptures, because in approximately 700 verses, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with all authority, summarizes the essential teachings of all of the Vedas. The Vedas are very difficult to understand. They are a vast ocean of literature. The Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, the 108 Upanishads, and then there are subordinate Upanishads, there are 18 Puranas, Mahabharata, the Itihastas, the Vedanta Sutra. All of these great literatures find their essence in the beautiful teachings of Sri Bhagavad Gita. The exceptional quality of the Gita gives it such great importance is that it is spoken directly by the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. It was here in Kurukshetra that Arjuna took the role of each and every struggling soul within this material creation. Actually, Arjuna was a liberated soul, an intimate friend of Lord Krishna. He was certainly beyond the dualities of material consciousness and the experiences within it. However, as a surrendered servant of the Lord, who had descended into this world with the Lord to assist Krishna in his mission Arjuna was willing to accept any role to facilitate Krishna's offering of compassion to all living beings. In the Gita, Krishna explains, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chutuskrita dharma samastha paradhaya sambhavami juke juke. He does not take birth in this world like an ordinary living being, karmana deva netre. We are all taking birth by the forces of the laws of karma due to our previous desires and activities. We are literally forced into a particular womb of a particular species of life. And then we have to accept the happiness and the miseries of that particular species of life. Nothing happens by chance. Everything is ordained by providence. And providence is controlled by the Supreme Controller, or Krishna. Krishna has created this material nature, and within it he has devised the means by which every living being can best learn the highest messages of truth through experience and sometimes through frustration. After all, unless we want to hear, we cannot hear at all. You can tell a person good instruction, but if that person is not eager to learn, it is like speaking to a dead wall. There can be no response. So the frustrations and the miseries of this world are carefully designed by the Lord just to ultimately bring the conditioned soul to a sober state of consciousness wherein that person is eager to hear the truth. Not simply in a ritualistic way, not simply in a way from an academic point of view, but with a desperate need to understand. So there are 8,400,000 species of life within this world. And each of them have a particular way in which the living entity enjoys and suffers. Each species of life has its particular powers that are unique amongst all species. And one species cannot imitate another. Just like the little worm. When we see the worm crawling in the ground, we do not think so much of it. But can you crawl in the ground like the worm? Living in the dirt. If a human being were able to do that, he would be considered a great, great yogi. If a human being were able to just crawl around underground in the dirt and live, people from all over the world would be coming to touch his feet, considering maybe you are an avatar. You can do what no one else can do. And the fly can fly. If a human being was able to fly like a fly, then people would say, oh, such a great mystic, such powers. Please give me your blessings, Swamiji. You can fly in the sky. Give me blessings that I can also fly. Perhaps you are the Supreme Godhead. What is the Supreme Godhead? He is doing what a fly can do. There are hundreds of millions of flies and hundreds of millions of worms, and no one worships them as Godhead. But if a human being can do what a fly or worm can do, then they are worshipped. So every living being has a particular power. The fish can live under the water their whole life and never come up for air. How is that possible? We cannot understand. The ant could lift hundreds of times more weight than his own body. No human being can demonstrate such powers. The vulture can see for miles and miles in the sky exactly what he is looking for. We cannot even see beyond one or two city blocks. So each species of life has particular opulences given by the Lord. And with those opulences he enjoys and suffers. And when one finally comes to the human species of life, through the soul's evolution, through millions and millions of lower species, the human being has one specific opulence that no other species is endowed with. And that is atato brahma jigyasa, that the human being has the power of intelligence to inquire into what is the truth. Why am I suffering? Who am I? What is God? What is my relationship with God? How to live a life in such a way that I can be freed once and for all from the miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death? Why are these threefold miseries, miseries caused by the body and mind, miseries caused by other living beings, and miseries caused by natural disturbances, always harassing the living entity? Ariyatmaka, Aridaivaka, Aribhogataka. The human being has the power to ask these questions and to pursue a life of tapasya. The animals do not pursue tapasya. The animals are simply seeking a solution to the problems of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But the human being is trying to solve a bigger problem. The problem of the repetition of birth and death, the ultimate problem of suffering itself. And that can only be done through tapasya. Tapodivyam bhutakayena sadvam sudyayasyam brahma sokyan dvananta. Tapasya means to live in such a way that we accept what is favorable for self-realization and we are willing to reject anything that is unfavorable for self-realization. One who lives by these principles has real integrity, is living according to the honor of the human species. So the living entity has to keep taking birth again and again and again according to his or her previous karmic activities and desires. Krishna says in Gita, Yam Yam Bhavi Smaran Bhavam Tejachante Kaleva. According to the particular state of consciousness that we may have at the time of death, that will determine where the soul is transported into the next life. We have three bodies as long as we are conditioned within this material world. There is our original spiritual body, which is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, Satchit Ananda. Krishna explains in Gita the nature of the soul. For the soul there is neither birth nor death, though having once been does he ever cease to be. The soul is transcendent to all of the dualities of material existence. It cannot be destroyed by any weapon. It cannot be moistened by water, burnt by fire, or withered by the wind. Mamayavam so jiva loke jiva bhuta shanata. Why is this? Because the soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, or Krishna. Qualitatively one with the Supreme Godhead, but quantitatively the insignificant infinitesimal part. The spirit of the soul can never become God. God is always God, and God never falls under the illusion of his own energies. The spirit soul is like a sun ray in comparison to the sun. Krishna is that sun, and we are all the rays emanating from Krishna. The sun ray may be separated by the cloud from the original sun, but the sun can never be disturbed by the existence of a cloud. So similarly, Maya, or illusion, is one of the three essential energies of the Lord. The Lord has multifarious energies, but the Shastras categorize them essentially as three. The internal spiritual energy, which is the source of all spiritual existence. It is emanating from the Supreme Godhead, and it is facilitating eternal transcendental loving pastimes between the Lord and the living entities forever in this spiritual existence. Beyond this material existence, there is the Parabrahma, or the Brahma Jyoti, which is filled with eminent spiritual light. And within that spiritual sky, there are innumerable spiritual planets called Vaikuntha, where the Supreme Lord is living in His various eternal forms, reciprocating pure love with His devotees. That is the spiritual energy of the Lord. Then there is the material energy, which is constituted of 24 elements. The material energy described in Bhagavad Gita, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and the false ego. These eight basic elements compose material energy. And then there is the Mahatattva, the cloud within the spiritual sky in which the entire material energy is manifested. And there is the five knowledge acquiring senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the flesh. And then there is the five indriyas, the working senses, the arms, the legs, the two evacuating organs, the procreation organ, like that. And then there is the five objects of the senses, smell, sound, touch, sight, taste. This is all created by the Supreme Lord, and it is considered to be the various manifestation of material energy. There are three modes of material nature: sattva-guna, rajaguna, tamaguna, goodness, passion, and ignorance, which are influencing the various desires of the soul who is embodied within the tabernacle or the encasement of this material energy. And it is all activated by Krishna, who enters into the universe as time. Time is that factor that is controlling everything. That it is creation, maintenance, and destruction of everything within material existence. So when the eternal soul, part of God, which is full of bliss, identifies itself with this material existence, that is called illusion. The spirit soul is the marginal energy of the Lord. Because of our infinitesimal nature, the soul always has the choice or the free will to either take shelter of the eternal spiritual energy of the Lord or the temporary material energy of the Lord. The material world is not an illusion. The material world is real. It is temporary. Its manifestations are temporary, but the energy which creates this temporary manifestations is the eternal energy of the Lord. What is an illusion is the misconception of the soul identifying itself with this material energy. And Bhagavad Gita was spoken by the Lord in order to teach us how to properly discriminate between truth and illusion. Therefore, Krishna descends into this world through so many avatars just for the purpose of giving all of us the opportunity to understand what is the real goal of life and how to achieve it. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chutuskritam dharma samstapanayataya sambhavami yuge yuge. Krishna is not forced to take birth in a particular family or species according to past karma. Krishna takes birth by his own inconceivable, independent, free will, only for the purpose of showing mercy and compassion to all living beings. By protecting his devotees, by annihilating ignorance, and by re-establishing the true principles of Dharma, Sanatana Dharma,
So Arjuna was Krishna's intimate friend. He was not subjected to the laws of nature. However, in order to assist Krishna, to present the absolute truth to human society, Arjuna voluntarily took the role of each and every one of us. And this most magnificent, extraordinary pastime took place here in Kurukshetra. Arjuna was on the battlefield. He came to fight the greatest war in history. It was not like the wars today between rival countries over who will possess which tract of land. Today, various government parties are claiming proprietorship over a particular place. They are not recognizing the reality beyond their earthly existence. And that is that everything is the property of God. Sarva Loka Maheshwara. The battle of Kurukshetra was a battle between pure dharma and adharma. Yudhisthira Maharaj, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula and Sahadeva, the sons of Pandu, were true devotees of the Lord, who wanted to rule the world perfectly according to religious principles. Why? So that all living beings could fulfill their real purpose of being in this world. The purpose of this world is to cross over it like a bridge and enter into the eternal abode of spiritual happiness. Anandamaya Vyashat, everyone is looking for happiness. From the insignificant insect to the greatest of the devatas in the sky of the heavenly planets. Everyone is looking for pleasure. But we are looking for pleasure through this body, mind, and senses. And the body and mind and senses are temporary, and the pleasures are limited. But the soul, the jivatma within, is unlimited and eternal. It is looking for real pleasure, pleasure that has no limit and no end. But we are looking in the wrong places. We are looking for pleasure in some acquirement of property, or in some taste, or some sight, or some smell, or some sound, vibration, or something that rubs against our skin. But what pleasure do we derive from these things? We are ambitious for it and work for it for so many years, and then the pleasure only lasts a few seconds. You see something with your eyes, you, oh, how nice, and then it is gone. You taste something with your tongue, oh, how wonderful, but then it's gone. This is the nature of the mind and senses. We're never satisfied. We're always hankering and lamenting. We're hankering for what we don't have, and then we lament after we get it and lose it. And as we start growing old, we lose our power to enjoy anything, even if we have it. And we realize that death is coming, and everything will be taken away. Is this the pleasure that is suited for the eternal blissful soul? Not at all. Therefore, Krishna appears in this world to teach us, your real happiness is not in enjoying through your mind and senses. Your real happiness is in reuniting with the source of all happiness, or God, Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. He is possessing all opulences in full, all knowledge, all strength, all beauty, all fame, all renunciation, all wealth. They are all within Krishna. And if we learn how to appreciate the glories of Krishna, then our pleasure becomes unlimited and eternal. However, somehow or other, Duryodhana and the Kurus, they were trying to rule the world in order to exploit it for their own personal, selfish, materialistic purposes. And the Pandavas wanted to teach the world how to perfect their lives by reuniting their consciousness with God through devotion or bhakti. So it was the forces of dharma and adharma that met on this great battlefield of Kurukshetra. Previously, Kurukshetra was not a battlefield. It was a holy place of pilgrimage. So many great rishis and incarnations came here to worship this place. Just some years before this great battle, during the solar eclipse, Lord Krishna, with all of the chief members of the Yadu dynasty, traveled all the way from Dwarka to Kurukshetra in order to celebrate the observance of the solar eclipse. He called the devotees from Vrindavan. All the Brijabasis came, and after long, long years of separation from Lord Krishna, Yashodamayi, Nanda Maharaj, Sri Radharani, the Gopas and the Gopis, they all met again with Lord Krishna. Such a grand and wonderful reunion it was. At that time, there was no mention of Kurukshetra being a battlefield. Kurukshetra was a great place where Maharaj Kuru performed great, great tapasya and sacrifice many years before. The place where Parasaram performed his tapasya after traveling around the world and purifying the planet of exploitative, greedy Kshatriya race. It is the place where Bhadrakali appeared and saved her devotee, Jadbharat. It is the place where Vamanadeva and so many other avatars came to perform wonderful leelas. In fact, the Puranas are filled with descriptions of the glories of Sri Kurukshetra. So for this reason, Krishna wanted to come to this holy place. He considered it such a pilgrimage. It was the place that the devotees left Vrindavan to come to meet Krishna. The Brijabasis would never ever leave Vrindavan for anything, for anyone to go anywhere. There is no record that they ever left Vrindavan. When Krishna was living in Vrindavan, one time Nanda Maharaj was putting various articles in ox carts. Krishna said, "Where are you going?" He's saying, "We're going to Badrinath and Kedarnath, Jamunotri, Gangotri, because these are the places that all pious Sanatana Dharmas should go in their life." Krishna said, "But there's no reason to ever leave Vrindavan. Everything is here. All holy places are here." So Krishna revealed to them how Gangotri, Jamunotri, Badrinath and Kedarnath were all within the vicinity of Vrindavan. And he took them to those places. So the residents of Vrindavan would never leave Vrindavan. But they left to come to Kurukshetra. Krishna convinced them, "Come here to see me in this holy place of pilgrimage." Dharmakshetre Kurukshetre Samaveda Yugutshava. The first verse of Bhagavad Gita declares how Kurukshetra is the holy land of Dharma, Dharmakshetre. It is a very pious and religious place since time immemorial. So Krishna was standing with Arjuna on his chariot between these two great armies. Soldiers from these armies assembled from all parts of the world to fight this war. And Arjuna then, by the will of Krishna, fell under the illusion that we are all in. He did not know what was to be done and what was not to be done. His material sentiments began to cover his real intelligence. He saw on both sides of this great battlefield were friends and relatives and well-wishers. So many attachments began to awaken within his heart. and cause such confusion? He was standing between good and evil, and he was sentimentally attached to each one of them, did not know what to do. It was in that condition that Arjuna, who was the intimate loving friend of Krishna, turned to Krishna as Jagat Guru. Arjuna said, "I am confused. I do not know what is right or wrong. I have lost all composure due to weakness of heart. Please instruct me. Now all our friendly talks have come to an end. Now I am accepting you as my guru. I am your disciple. Please instruct me. Save me." When Arjuna was inquiring from Krishna, he was an intellectual study. Arjuna was in a desperate state of consciousness. It is a matter of life or death. I must know what is the truth. Otherwise, I cannot go on living. I cannot live in disillusion. Please give me light. I am in darkness. Save my soul. This eagerness is how all of us must approach God. According to how you approach Krishna, that is how much he will reveal the truth to you. Arjuna played the role of all of us. We are all standing in a battlefield in this material world. Not only are we standing within a battlefield, but the battlefield is within us. Within our own minds there is a battlefield. There are so many friends and so many enemies fighting against each other. Whose side will you take? At every moment you have this choice. There is the Maya, the illusory energy, who has six very, very formidable enemies, who has taken permanent posts within your mind. Just like there is the border disputes between India and Pakistan, and every now and then they are fighting and shooting at each other. Similarly, there is a border dispute within our mind. On one side, there is lust, anger, envy, pride, greed, and illusion. And they want to occupy more and more of the territory of our consciousness. They want to take over the whole consciousness. And they have so many weapons and so many nuclear bombs and astras to use to somehow or other capture the field of our consciousness. And on the other side, there is the word of Krishna. Give up sense gratification. Give up false ego. Give up lust, anger, pride, envy, illusion, and greed. Worship me. Remember me. Chant my holy names. Do seva for me. We have this voice on one side, and that voice is saying, Krishna is speaking through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, saying, completely put your consciousness on me. Always remember me. Surrender to me. On one hand, we have the voice of Krishna being spoken through the sadhus, the guru, and the shastras. And on the other hand, we have all the gurus saying, "No, no, don't listen to this message. What will your family members say? What will the society say? On Sundays, you can give a little donation and be pious. But what is this? Give your consciousness to Krishna. Surrender to Krishna. It is not the proper time. Maybe in previous ages this was practical, but not in the 20th century. So there's the war. And at every moment we're being pulled in both directions, and the spirit soul is like Arjuna. He's between these two formidable armies. most of human society has just wholesale joined the Kuru army. For them, there's no dispute. They're simply giving their lives in the direction of utter destruction and illusion. But they're convinced, there's no confusion. And then there is the self-realized Paramhamsas. They have completely given their lives to the service of God. They are in the eternal bliss of spiritual consciousness, devotion. And then there is us, we're in the middle. We simultaneously understand some of what Krishna is saying, but we're also hearing so many voices of what Maya is saying. How to fight this great battle within our own mind? That is what Arjuna was inquiring from Krishna. And he was inquiring on behalf of you and me. Understand what the necessity of Bhagavad Gita is. It's spoken for you and me, it's not spoken for Arjuna. The academic scholars, they say, oh, Arjuna was in confusion and he asked this question and Krishna replied according to his Kshatriya nature of what he should do. They missed the whole spirit of the Gita. The Gita was not for Arjuna. It was for you. There's a Bengali saying that the mother teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. Because the daughter is very intimate to the mother. And the daughter-in-law, when she comes into the new family, she's very much generally fearful because it's a new situation. What am I supposed to do? I don't know. This is a very foreign environment to me. So therefore, the mother doesn't want to chastise the daughter-in-law. Why are you doing like this? You have done it wrong. Because the daughter-in-law becomes very much afraid. Too much in suffering. But still, the daughter-in-law must learn. So even though the daughter knows everything, the mother will say to the daughter, why you have done like this, you do like this. And the daughter-in-law hears. And in this way she learns everything without being chastised. So similarly, Krishna, when he wants to teach the world, he teaches through his intimate devotee. Even though the devotee knows everything, he teaches the devotee in order to teach us. Arjuna heard from Krishna because he wanted us to hear the message of Krishna. Krishna was speaking to you through Arjuna. How merciful is the Lord, and how merciful is his devotee. And how important it is for us to take seriously the message Krishna is speaking to us. And if we want to understand Bhagavad Gita properly, we must understand in the spirit of Arjuna. Krishna says to Arjuna, Aptasime sahasiti rahasyam yetatumutamam. That Arjuna, you can understand the mysteries of this Gita, because you are my friend and my devotee. Others cannot understand it. Atyanama vijanati yavanyashtasmitatvata. Krishna said this transcendental mystery of Gita is impossible to understand unless one is following in the footsteps of Arjuna by being a devotee of Krishna, by accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead who has all authority, and accepting that we are his servant. In this spirit, the real truths of the Gita can be revealed to within our heart, beyond just academic theoretical understandings of Sanskrit grammar and philosophy. The purpose of Sanskrit philosophy of the Gita is to awaken a transformation of consciousness from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness. From darkness to light, from illusion to truth, from exploitation of the resources of matter to complete dedication and service to the Supreme Form of God. This is the purpose of the Gita. And how Krishna put Arjuna in such a wonderful, wonderful experience where Arjuna represented you and me. right here in Kurukshetra. And Krishna began to speak to Arjuna. Asochananda sochastram pragyavadushta vasate. Arjuna, you have presented so many arguments. Arjuna said, Krishna, I will not fight this war. Then he gave so many good reasons not to fight. After all, how will I enjoy the kingdom even if I win, if I know that the blood of my grandfather and my teacher and so many other noble souls have been spilled just so that I can enjoy the kingdom? I cannot. And if all these great personalities are killed, then the women will have no one to protect them, then they will be exploited, then there will be unwanted population, this unwanted population, children will be raised without proper samskaras, and then they will mislead society, and they will grow up, and the whole society will become irreligious, and everyone will just be going into the road of ignorance. Therefore, I will not fight. But maybe I should fight. I do not know what I should do or what I shouldn't do. I do not know what is religion or what is irreligion. I do not know what is my duty or not my duty. Arjuna is torn between fighting and not fighting. Then Krishna told him, Arjuna, you are speaking like a very learned pundit, but actually you are a fool. Because you are lamenting for what not should be. You are lamenting for, you should lament neither for the living nor the dead. You should understand the spiritual quality underlying this material existence. Krishna began the teachings to Arjuna by calling him a fool. Hare Krishna. This means before we can understand Gita, first we have to accept that we are fools. Not scholars, but fools. Arjuna was a great scholar. He knew the Vedanta, he knew so many higher truths. He was such a great politician. He was more learned than anyone can be today. But he said, I don't know anything, Krishna. And Krishna said, yes, you are a fool. So this is the beginning of the teachings of Gita. You must accept you are a fool. Now, people don't like to think like this. I have gone to college for 20 years to get PhDs and degrees, and you want me to say I'm a fool? Very different. One of my godbrothers got a PhD in philosophy, and he, in his office in the university, he had a sign outside of his room that said, PhD in philosophy. That means he actually understood philosophy, finally. Until we understand we don't know, how will we open our minds to know? It's like in the university, the teacher wants to put so many lessons on the blackboard. You call them blackboards here? Chalkboard. Now, before he begins his lesson, first he erases everything else of the previous lessons. Then it can be clearly written, what is the lesson for today? You cannot understand the lesson until you first completely erase everything that was previously there. So similarly, when we come before God to understand the truth, we have to come with a clear slate, with a clear heart. Krishna, you instruct me. Now, your instructions should not be constantly interpreted by my previous conditionings of what is reality. I should simply accept it for what it is. Now, people do not like to hear this in the age of Kali Yuga. Why? Because Maya does not want them to. Maya wants to puff people up with so much false pride. Now, although Arjuna accepted his position of a fool, he did not forget all of his previous knowledge. He simply opened his heart for real truth and direction, and then used everything he had for that purpose. Arjuna was a great Kshatriya, a great fighter, a great statesman. He didn't forget all those things, but he utilized them all in pursuance of the truth. This is how talented, educated people should approach Bhagavad Gita. Then our Krishna began to explain to Arjuna the very basic fundamental principle of knowledge. Who I am. Deyino smin yatha dehe komaram yodaram jara tatha dehantara pratyatiras tatranam yateryam. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, similarly the soul enters into another body at the time of death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by this change. There is no such thing as death for the soul. What happens at the time when the inevitable destruction of this physical body takes place is that the soul just changes into... As you change clothes, when your old clothes are no longer worthy of your wearing, similarly, the spirit soul changes bodies when this body is no longer fit to be our residence. And there are 8,400,000 different categories of bodies or dresses that we can enter into. And according to our particular desires that we have at the time of death, that will determine what type of body we enter into after we leave this body. This is called the transmigration of the soul. The soul is not born with this body, and the soul did not die with this body. The soul is passing through one after another until we finally come to the conclusion of surrendering to the Supreme Soul, Lord Krishna. The laws of karma are being conducted by these three modes of material nature. When we're influenced by goodness, passion, and ignorance within this world, we engage in various activities, and there will inevitably always be a reaction to each and every activity that we perform in this world. Just as there are the laws of state, we are responsible to accept the reward or punishment according to our actions, either in accordance or in disobedience to the Lord. Similarly, there are laws of nature, but the laws of nature are infallible, because the Lord is seated within everyone's heart besides the soul that is watching all of our activities. And everything you do, everything you speak, there will be a reaction. That is karma. And you will get some of the reactions in this life, and whatever reactions you have not received in this life, you will get in future lives. And that will determine where you are born, how you are born, who you are born from, and what are the pleasures and pains of life that you experience in your next birth and in future births. Krishna explained that there are higher planets within this material universe for those who are very pious, where we can enjoy inconceivable amount of material pleasure. And there are lower planets within this universe where there is inconceivable suffering. This earth planet is in the middle, where there is some suffering and some happiness. Krishna says, Avramabhu Vanaloka Punaravati Lojana Mamutai Ketu Konteya Punarajan Manavati. From the highest planet in this material world, where the greatest amount of wealth and pleasure is available, down to the lowest, most miserable planets of the hells, they are all places of misery. They are all temporary. They are all places of birth and death. One who is intelligent utilizes his valuable human life to achieve my eternal abode. And how do we achieve the Lord's eternal abode? where everything is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Janma karma chamandivyam evam yogi jitatvata yatva deham punara chamanaiti mamiti sorja. Krishna said, one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, that cannot take birth again in this material world, but achieves my abode. Sadhvadipramitatena pariprasena sevaya. If you want to understand these truths, you must approach a proper spiritual master, inquire submissively, and render service to him. The proper spiritual master never claims to be God. The proper spiritual master never speculates or invents a system of philosophy. The proper spiritual master simply repeats the true words of the scripture as a servant to God and a servant to all humanity. Evam parampara tattvam idam rajashaya. He comes in a disciple succession and simply like a postman presents the message. But Krishna explains, madbhakta pujavyadika. That one who is representing in the humble service of the Lord, we should honor that person with great respect. And how do we honor? By hearing submissively and by serving the teachings that he is giving. And what is that teaching? The Bhagavad Gita embodies that message. And the essence of the message is that all of our activities should be for the service of God. Yat karosi yat asmasi, yashto hosi dadasi yat, yat tapasyasi konte yat atkurusha madarvana. Chaturvaya mayastrifam guna karma vivanashana. Vivanashandhana is, there are basically different types of people with different qualities who want to do different types of work. The Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, the Shudras, the Brahmacharis, the Grihastha, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis, according to our given nature, due to our previous karmas, we have certain inclinations. Krishna explains what are the duties of each of these particular divisions and how we should live according to these responsibilities. Caste is not by birth, but it is by guna and karma, by one's qualities and activities, the work one performs. So the Bhagavad Gita systematically and scientifically describes how we should perform our particular duties in a spirit of devotion to God. Krishna said, all that you eat, all that you do, all the sacrifices you perform, everything should be done as an offering to me. Bhaktyanama bhujanati, with devotion. This is the art of real living. If we are a teacher, if we are a businessman, if we are a politician, if we are a student, if we are a housewife, if we are a farmer, how to perform our work in a spirit of devotion to God? How to remember God with love, and make every part of our life an offering of love to Krishna? That is the essence of human existence, to live in this consciousness with Krishna in the center. If we are in family, our house is the property of God. God's will should be performed within our house. The husband should respect the wife, and the wife should respect the husband in such a way that we are partners in the service of God. And we should raise our children to become pure, blissful, liberated devotees of God. We may give them food, we may give them housing, we may give them education, how to live in this world. But not only how to live in this world, we must teach them why they should live in this world. If you teach a child how to be a good businessman or a good computer technologist or a good farmer or a good politician, that is an external duty of a parent. But unless you teach them why they should do it and who they should do it for, you have failed as a parent. From the point of view of Scripture, from the point of view of God, you should perform these duties. I will arm you with all of these good skills, but use them for the proper purpose. Arjuna was a military man. He learned from Dronacharya all the arts of military. He learned not only fighting skills, but ruling and administrative skills. He went to his universities and colleges of the day, and he was well educated. But so was Duryodhana. He was equally educated in all the science of politics, administration, and combat. What was the difference between Arjuna and Duryodhana? Arjuna understood why he should use these. They are all meant for the service of God. They are all meant for the welfare of humanity by bringing them closer to the true path of Dharma. And Duryodhana simply saw all of these skills as a way of trying to improve the quality of the material life of he and his family members. So are we Duryodhanas or are we Arjunas? We have our education, we have our skills, we have our expertise. Are we doing it for the selfish welfare of ourselves and our family members? Or are we doing it as a sacrifice of devotion to God? It's not that Arjuna was less loving to his family members than Duryodhana. He was more loving. He was teaching them the path of light. Duryodhana was teaching them the path of darkness. So Bhagavad Gita teaches us how to utilize the facilities and the skills that God has given us in this world in such a way that we be liberated and we give that liberation to others. This is the great message that took place here in Kurukshetra. Gita culminates sarva dharmam paritya jamam ekai sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami mahasaja. Abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to Krishna. Krishna says me. When Krishna says me, he doesn't mean some impersonal existence within him. When Krishna says me, he means Krishna. If Krishnananda says, please bring me water, do we bring water to the sky and say, the sky is Krishnananda? No, we bring it to Krishnananda because he said me. Me means him. It's very simple. Mahabharata was not for big philosophers. The Mahabharata was for simple people. All the teachings of the Vedas, all the lofty philosophy was for people, women, children, fallen Brahmins. The Mahabharata was a practical scripture in story form. The Gita was spoken in this context. There was no symbolic, illusory language of flowery words. When Krishna says me, he means me. It's very simple. And here in this verse that we are reading today from the 11th chapter of the Gita, Krishna is revealing his universal form to Arjuna, the Virat Roop. It was there in Jyotisar, here in the land of Kurukshetra, that Krishna manifested the Virat Roop, where there were unlimited faces and hands and arms and legs. All living beings were rushing into his mouth, being devoured. Arjuna saw the sun and the moon, the skies and the oceans, everything within this form. He was trembling. I had never seen such a form like this. Krishna said, this is my form of time, creator, maintainer, and destroyer of everything. Arjuna was telling Krishna in this verse that, oh Krishna, oh Yadava, oh my friend, I didn't know who you were. Sometimes I just sat in bed with you and laughed and told jokes. Sometimes we ate together.
I just treated you as an equal. And friend, please forgive me. I did it out of love. But now I understand your supreme opulence, your ultimate glory. You are the Lord of all lords. In fact, Arjuna prayed, please, Krishna, take this form away. It's more effulgent than millions and millions of suns. I cannot bear to see it. This is the nature of love. Even though Arjuna was seeing Krishna in this most magnificent, opulent, awesome Virat Rupa, he was still thinking of Krishna as his intimate friend. This was in his heart. In the purified state, we can go beyond seeing the supreme opulence of Godhead, and we can love him with the intimacy of a friend, or a lover, or a parent, or a servant. This is the super excellent reality of the spiritual world. So it is this love for Krishna that is the ultimate goal of life. And Krishna appeared again in this age of Kali Yuga as Lord Chaitanya to teach us the practical application of the Gita in our daily life. How to always remember Krishna. It is natural when your heart is clean. And how to clean your heart in this age? To live by the principles of Gita in our daily life, and to always remember him through the simple process of chanting his holy name. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
The Bhagavad Gita is a universal message meant for the deliverance of all human existence. And it was spoken in this holy pilgrimage site of Kurukshetra. Unfortunately, people are misunderstanding the teachings of the Gita and not seeing the importance or relevance to the Gita in our 20th century life. People are more concerned with all sorts of modern ideas of how to be happy and how to overcome stress. These are the best-selling books today in the marketplace. The best-selling books are usually just novels about romance and all of these things. Why do people read these things? Because there's a need in their heart. They want to hear something about love. Because the soul is searching for the love between themselves and God. The soul is longing to hear the wonderful pastimes of love between Krishna and devotees. But because we have lost our taste for that, we're looking for the romantic love of this world, which simply agitates the senses and mind. And then when we're so agitated, then all these books come out, how to deal with misery, how to deal with stress, how to be a better, more efficient businessman, how to deal better with people and stop offending them all of the time. And it's all these psychological, psychiatric books. People are very much eager to improve their lives. But the best they could do is make some temporary adjustments within their ever-changing brain. The Bhagavad Gita teaches us how to transform our whole consciousness into that of a compassionate, loving devotee of God and all living beings. Self-satisfied in every situation of life, progressing toward the ultimate goal at every moment. Bhagavad Gita is the supreme message coming from the Supreme Lord. The author of Gita is not just a scholar or a psychologist. The author of the Gita is the all-knowing supreme person who is seated within everyone's heart. This message is meant for the deliverance of the suffering of all living beings within all of the world. The people are not taking it seriously. Our beloved Guru Maharaj, His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he traveled around the world 14 times discussing the teachings of the Gita. He translated the Gita into English language and later into 100 languages. Tens of millions of copies in over 100 languages in the world were distributed of this, of his great commentaries of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita as it is. It transformed the hearts of so many. Americans, Europeans, Russians, Australians, Africans, completely giving up sinful activities and fixing their minds totally in devotion to God and real welfare to humanity. How is it possible? The power of the Gita's teaching. And in India, so many of these young boys, they were basically agnostics at the most, practically atheists. Being studying under Western educational standards, being taught to doubt everything, that money is God. And if there is a God beyond money, if you pray to Him, He'll give you more money. And if He doesn't give you more money, forget Him. You don't need Him. You have your own skills. You are a self-made man. You are independent. You can stand on your own two feet. What is the need of this God? But for the sake of family traditions, you should do a little puja, because after your grandfather will be happy. This is how they're being educated. They're being practically atheists and agnostics, chasing like moths into the flame of Western materialistic civilization. How is it that these young men and girls, they are actually taking to the real inspiration of the Bhagavad Gita to dedicate their lives to real spiritual welfare work to all of society, dedicating their existence to helping others understand what is truth? And the people around them say, what are you doing? Why? You're going too far. This is not good. You keep Krishna in on a shelf, keep it in the closet, close it. For a few minutes in the morning and a few minutes on Sundays, you open and you offer obeisances, give a little lamp and agarbati, and then close it. And then you have your own life. But they cannot live like this. They have too much scientific understanding of Western education. They can no longer accept dry, empty rituals. They cannot accept a religion based on tradition anymore. Because they see around them so much greed and so much anxiety and so much starvation and strife. What is the use of these traditions? Previously, people could remain basically religious in India because it was the family tradition. But now we have let in, we have opened the doors to Western education, academic science. Now some people cannot accept for those reasons. Either you prove to me that it's scientifically, philosophically correct, or I cannot accept it. Maybe, just out of courtesy, I will bow down. But in my heart, I will not accept. They're more interested in television, in rock and roll, in Western dress, and all sorts of these things, because they give happiness. It's progressive. And vegetarianism, that is something of the old age. Now I need proteins. Because when I have proteins, I will have more strength to make money and to enjoy. Hare Krishna. Many misconceptions. Therefore, the young people today, unless they are scientifically, philosophically convinced of the truth, they cannot accept it. And Bhagavad Gita has come to teach. It's been here all along, but people are not understanding it in a philosophical, practical way. The young people now, in the West, in the East, they are actually dedicating their lives to real service to humanity and God through the teachings of Gita. So how important this message is to the world. For this reason, Srila Prabhupada, when he came to Kurukshetra, I believe it was in 1976, huh? 75. He especially told his disciples that we should develop a temple and a university at Jyotisar to teach the true spirit of the teachings of the Gita. And if we make something very beautiful there, something not only beautiful in structure, but in spirit, then people from all over the world will understand what is the glory of Kurukshetra, what is the glory of Bhagavad Gita. This temple is for the transformation of the heart of the world, from the big leaders to the common man. Let them understand the real spirit of the teachings of Gita as Arjuna did. Let them understand the glory of Kurukshetra as the place that Bhagavad Gita was spoken to the whole world. This temple is not meant to be just like another temple where people come to have darshan and then give some donation and take a little mahaprasad and go home and say, I have seen. I have become pious because I touched the ground of that place. That is good. But the purpose of this temple in our Guru Maharaj's vision was to transform the consciousness of the planet Earth. Krishna spoke the Gita from Kurukshetra at Jyotisar, and it is from that place that the whole world is meant to recognize the glories of real Dharma. The day after tomorrow is groundbreaking ceremony. 75, and now it is 1998, that is 23 years since our Guru Maharaj revealed his great dream. Finally, some land has been acquired by the great kindness of the government of Haryana, and the great kindness of so many well-wishers who have helped us in so many ways. And it is our great hope that our Guru Maharaj's dream will be fulfilled. And day after tomorrow, 27th of March 1998, the cornerstone will be laid for this temple. How it will be built, that Krishna knows. We only know that Krishna wants it. And we must all participate in whatever way we can to help with this great, great effort.
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.